On the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
The first one of the offseason for the Brewers, anyway. Welcome in, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio. Just wrapped up the end-of-season press conference with manager Pat Murphy and newly minted president of baseball operations, Matt Arnold. We'll get into what that means here in this segment. We'll talk about the NLCS, putting a bow on it, wrapping up, kind of reacting to all of it, and hear from Murph on how he felt his team performed in that sweep. We'll talk about the report put out by Andy McCullough of The Athletic that the Brewers are shopping Freddy Peralta, and I'm here to promise you that is not what you think it means. And then also, we'll talk some news and nuggets, some injury updates that we got from today's press conference and things to react to. And then furthermore, the way too early opening day preview of who is in the race, not necessarily projecting the roster, but just looking at who are going to be the players that are involved in trying to decide who's going to be on the club in a season. So let's start with the first bit of breaking news that we got today. And that was a promotion to Matt Arnold. He has been promoted from general manager to president of baseball operations. And you may be thinking, Dom, isn't that the same thing? You're right. It is the same thing. His day-to-day does not change. His role does not really change. It's got a fancy new title on it. The reason why you name a president of baseball operations above a general manager is that now he cannot take a quote-unquote increase in a title to go to another job. You know, for instance, if somebody was trying to poach him from the Brewers, there are still teams trying to figure out what their front office is going to look like, that, you know, hey, we have a vacancy in our president of baseball operations, and here's Matt Arnold as a general manager, you wouldn't be able to block that interview because it's technically a promotion. Not anymore. He's under contract. He's got a new contract. He did not divulge on details as to the length, the terms, that sort of thing. But at the same time, this is a well-earned promotion for him. He is staying as a Milwaukee Brewer, and it also helps the guys on the back row in what we call as the ivory tower. But here's what Matt Arnold had to say earlier today about earning this new title.
It's not going to change materially. Honestly, I've never really been focused on titles at all. Honestly, it's just been something where you keep your head down and you work hard and good things will happen. And obviously thankful to a ton of people here, including this guy, first and foremost, our ownership, family, like just too many people to thank, but especially the guys that are here that I work with every single day, really, really impactful in my life, and they're some of my best friends too. So it's a great situation. I'm proud to be here in Milwaukee.
You know, the guy next to him, of course, being Pat Murphy in this press conference, some of the guys that he mentioned that were there with them, including assistant general managers Will Hudgens, Matt Klein, Carl Muller, Todd Johnson was in the room as well. And then there's the addition of, you know, Tom Flanagan, Cam Castro, Matt Klentak. All these guys are a part of the ivory tower that we call it as far as how this team continues to churn out an incredible product seemingly every season. Now, on the front of ownership and small market difficulties and what it takes to be successful in this market, his answer to asking, you know, was there big market inefficiencies there when you're facing the Dodgers? How unfair is that when you're the plucky Brewers and you're having to face a quality team like that? No. I really love the answer here. It's not on him on the economics of the sport. Just figure out a way to win.
I think that it's not our job to think about, you know, what the economics of the sport are. That's above all of us. You know, in our situation, we just have, like, what are we going to do about it? You know, that's really where I come at it from is, you know, we're gonna have the resources that we need. We have support from our ownership to put a quality product on the field. There are a lot of small market teams that can't say that, and we can. And then there are also a lot of teams that spent a lot of money that didn't get in, you know. And so I don't think it's just about the money, you know, and about the economics of the sport. They are what they are. And again, like I said, it's just what are we going to do about it?
Try to win. Try to shock everybody and say, yeah, we're going to win. And, you know, he talked about you got to spend money well in order to, you know, make it to the postseason, and it's not a guarantee. Look at the New York Mets, or look at a team like the Yankees and the Phillies. They didn't get past the division series. The Brewers did, and obviously the Phillies had to match up with the Dodgers, but you get my point here. The Red Sox, they couldn't, you know, get out of the wild card series. Toronto, you know, yes, they were the one seed, but they had to go seven games long with the Seattle Mariners. So no dollar amount for your payroll is a guaranteed mark. But we'll talk about more of that stuff later on. We talk about the Nuggets and the way too early look at opening day for next year. So that's a little bit here off the top for Matt Arnold, the new president of baseball operations of your Milwaukee Brewers. 855-616-1620 is the phone number. Again, 855-616-1620. That's the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Let's hear from Pat Murphy coming up next, talking about that sweep in the NLCS. Back after this on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
It wasn't pretty. It wasn't fun. Maybe a hit by pitch and, you know, a rally somewhere changes the entire story of that CS. But nonetheless, the Brewers are swept. That's how the Baseball Reference will look for the rest of time. A 4-0 sweep for the LA Dodgers over these Milwaukee Brewers. And the numbers are not pretty. A 118 team batting average, a 384 team OPS, a weighted runs created plus of 8. Again, 100 is league average. They had 8 as their WRC plus. It wasn't pretty offensively, we know that. Pat Murphy's impression of how the Brewers performed in the second round of the postseason.
He would have a better perspective, being how he lives it, that world that can have insightful perspective. From my world, I felt like we did not put our best foot forward in that series, and I think it would have made some difference. But the Dodgers were on it, and you know when a team is on it. And we, the balls we did hit hard, for instance, got caught. You know, our ball in play, I think, was 130, something record low. I don't think the Dodgers are going to play that way every series. It isn't like they're that dominant every series, as we've proved during the season. So I don't look at it as like, how do we get to that point? I don't think there's ever been a team at that point, you know what I mean, could ever aspire to be better than that. It's just, it's what we do. It's like consistently, how can we figure it out? And then we end up in these situations and hopefully we're playing our best or things are going great for us at that time and we don't run into that type of buzzsaw when we did.
The Dodgers were incredible. And more on the Dodgers, and there can be both things happening at once where the Brewers did not play well, that's a fact, and the Dodgers kept them down. I think both of those things can happen simultaneously. Whereas I think if we're sitting here talking about a series that went six games and the Brewers put their best foot forward, but look at that roster, right? Like, I think you're feeling like, well, you know what? What can you do? But the fact that it was a sweep, you're always going to have this bad taste in your mouth, this sort of aftertaste of, man, they're better than that. I just wanted to see them play better than that. And they knew that too, but I think that the Brewers met a new level. There's a phrase that you'll hear in baseball, specifically in the minor leagues and when you work your way up to the show. In the minor leagues, whenever a guy is dominating that level, move him up. Up to the next level. Move him up, right? And as you work your way up to the levels and you go from maybe A ball to high A to double A and so on and so forth. But then you get to the big leagues. And maybe you arrive and you're struggling and you're like, hey man, there's no other level for that guy to go to. There's not another one up. This is it. You know, adapt or die. Moneyball, shout out. But the point is, there is another level in Major League Baseball. There's postseason baseball. And when you're facing the best team that money can buy, that level is revealed very quickly.
And I don't think we had a brutal performance. We had brutal results, but we didn't have guys trying any less. Or it's just when you face pitching like that, you're not going to, nobody's surprised when a guy goes from one level to the next and struggles offensively. They're like, well, he's facing a higher level. Those pitchers, and there are at least three or four of them, that was a higher level than anybody had seen in the year. You know what I mean? That was special stuff on those particular nights. So I don't look at our performance in the against the Dodgers as like that brutal. We didn't put our best foot forward, but there's all sorts of things to learn from it about how do we get them playing consistent. One is you don't play five games in the division series, so you have a couple days. So there's all sorts of things that play into it.
I think that was a little Easter egg there from Murph. And he wouldn't say it publicly, and I bet a lot of people in the front office wouldn't say the same either. But the truth of the matter is, the Brewers were up 2-0 going to Wrigley. They didn't expect to play a Game 5. They didn't want to play a Game 5. They wanted to play Game 4 at most. But the fact that they had to sweat it out, use a bunch of their pitching in a Game 5, take one day off, and get ready to host Game 1, that taxes you more than you realize. And I'm not making an excuse. I'm just saying the reality. The Brewers had a missed opportunity to go in even fresher against the Dodgers, wrapping up that series at Wrigley, coming home and get an extra day off or two, like the Dodgers got to do, wrapping up in 4 against Philadelphia. I think that weighed more than we gave it credit for. The Brewers played such a stressful, anxious, tension-filled Game 5 against their division rival with, you know, really ferocious crowds here at American Family Field. That takes a lot out of you. As much as the best athletes in the world won't admit it, the human nature of it all suggests that, yeah, no one's perfect. This was going to be a very difficult come down, and to come right back up and get ready to face maybe the best team ever assembled. On that note, until Game 4, the Brewers did a really good job against Shohei Ohtani. And really, Shohei was slow the whole postseason. I should scratch that. Aside from the wild card series he had against the Cincinnati Reds when he had the two-homer game in Game 1 of that series. But from the DS until Game 3, right? So the first, the 9 games since the wild card. All right. Shohei was just 3-for-29, a 103 batting average, 5 walks. Granted, 3 of them were intentional, 14 strikeouts. I mean, almost a 45% strikeout rate. That's remarkable. So the Brewers were doing, and the Phillies for that matter, were doing a good job against him. And then obviously Game 4 happens, maybe the best game ever asked. You know, I put my hand up. I asked the tough question that, you know, I think I was curious about. I'm sure other people are. Can you compartmentalize it? Can you sit here and go, my goodness, it's happening against my team, but holy cow, I just witnessed something special. Murph took it, understood the assignment, and said, no, I'm still a competitor. I know what I watched, and I'm going to respect it, but it's still going to boil me that it was against the Brewers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't look at that as anything I spend any time on, Don. Like, I don't like to lose no matter what game it is. 10-0 to, you know, 1-0 to no hitter to one hitter. You know, like, it's just like, it is what it is. Let everybody else enjoy the historic moment. I didn't enjoy it that much, but I knew what I was part of. It was like a 12-year-old Little League, you know what I mean? It looked like the big 12-year-old in a local Little League game, and he hits 3 homers and punches out everybody. It didn't feel that good, but yeah, I don't categorize that as, oh my God, you know, that's against us, you know?
It was still pretty wild. I can't believe I was in the building for that one, and we reacted to it all. It's the last episode here on the podcast feed. Brewers All Access. If you're listening live and you didn't know that we had the podcast feed, Brewers All Access is where you can find all of these programs. All right, enough with the NLCS. Let's talk about Freddy Peralta. Let's really make you angry, right? No, Matt Arnold explains he understands the report, but why he doesn't see it the same way. We'll explain what the market could be for Freddy Peralta and how busy it really is this offseason on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. 855-616-1620 if you want to talk some Brewers with us. 855-616-1620, the Signing Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Because I know this next segment stirred up a lot of controversy and reaction on social media. Andy McCullough writing, pretty much while the body was still warm on the Brewers season, that Freddy Peralta is going to be shopped this offseason. So, first and foremost, before we go any further into this, let me have you hear it straight from the horse's mouth, as in Matt Arnold, in reaction to reading that report.
Yeah, I feel like that's been out there, and to be honest, it's not at the front of my mind. Honestly, it's something where you know, of course, you know, we can never shut the door on anything in our situation. Of course, we've had to make very tough decisions, and I think that's part of what we have to do is make tough decisions to help the long-term view of the franchise. But I can tell you that Freddie means more to that clubhouse than most that I've ever been around. And, you know, he's a special player on and off the field, and you know, I'm proud to have him as a teammate here.
There's a few things that go into Freddie Peralta, the player and the man that help out the Brewers. First and foremost, I've been talking about it all season long when people ask, you know, who's the leader of the clubhouse now that Willy Adames is gone. Freddie Peralta picked up that torch. I really believe it. You may not hear all about it. He doesn't speak to the media aside from start days, but he's still very social with us. He has a very good relationship with all of us on the beat. The other thing that I think is underrated about all of this, and we take it for granted in the baseball world, we take it for granted in the world period, he's bilingual, okay? And the fact that he can talk to every single person in that clubhouse is not something lost on anybody. Furthermore, he's made it sort of a thing for hangouts at the Peralta house. You know, have the players come over and play dominoes, hang out, decompress, relax. He's got his family. He's got everybody around. He's got a chance to be sort of a, I don't want to say caregiver, but just sort of a host. Somebody that can show the ropes to young players of this is what it's going to be like when you're older in the show. You know, one of the longest tenured Brewers now getting the chance to come back for one more year. And to remind you, the club option is $8 million, up to another almost million for bonuses. And he'll get another, you know, few figures, few another comma on his paycheck this year, thanks to probably a top five Cy Young award, another All-Star appearance. He got a check from that as well from Major League Baseball. So it was a great year for the pocketbook for Freddie Peralta. But the fact that just assume, oh, he's on the final year of his deal, he must be traded. $8 million is not a lot of money for the production you're getting out of Freddie Peralta. And again, I've said it over and over and over all season long. I'll repeat it here. I am not going to trade him. I wouldn't. I'm not the guy in charge, but I don't see a reason to do it for a couple of reasons. Number one, that $8 million is still less than what each of those three examples, air quotes here, examples, were traded for heading into their final year. Even Devin Williams got $8.6 million in arbitration in his final year of arbitration last year heading to New York. So then on top of that, you've got Josh Hader. He was owed $14 million in his final year of arbitration. Now, again, these numbers are dealt before or after, I should say, he was traded, but you get what I'm trying to say here. Hader got $14 million. Burns got $15.6 million in his final year of arbitration. So the numbers are just not the same as far as, oh, you're really saving a ton of cash here by trading Freddie Peralta. That just doesn't make sense. Furthermore, the production, again, the dude hasn't missed a start since 2022. This year, career high in starts, if you include the postseason, 36 starts. He threw a total, again, if you include the postseason with the other roughly 16 innings he threw in the postseason, 192 innings this year. That's career high for him. Three straight seasons of 200 or more strikeouts. Second time, he was an all-star. He lowered his homers. He stayed stagnant with the walk. You would like to see that a bit lower. Fewer hits allowed despite more innings being pitched. He is still getting better. Second best whip of his career for a full season. The production you're getting out of Freddie Peralta is worth so much more than the $8 million he will be paid next year, which, unless you're robbing Fort Knox, which I don't think any team would do, given you saw the return on Corbin Burns, right? A draft pick in two pieces in D.L. Hall and Joey Ortiz. I mean, that was for $15.6 mil. What are you going to get for eight and a ton of production? When you look at the value on Fangraphs, and it doesn't work like this apples to apples, but this contract that Freddie Peralta signed saved the team a ton of money. This year alone, if you just go by Fangraph's model of WAR, 3.6 F-WAR, second best season of his career in the F-WAR category, that's a $29 million season based on the market. Got paid eight. That's why you don't trade him. He's worth more than the $8 million. And that reliability I'm talking about. When you look to next season, we'll talk about the young pitching later on, position battles to look out for in the way too early opening day segment. But you look at the innings pitched, right? We just talked about it, 192 innings, including postseason for Freddie Peralta. He led the team. Know who was second on the team in innings pitched this season? Chad Patrick. Think about that for a second. In total, minor leagues, big leagues, and postseason innings, Chad Patrick set a career high 173 innings pitched this season. Like, that's not a lot of depth. Then you got Quinn Priester, obviously, right behind him at 166. Jacob Mizorowski reached a level he's never reached before, 141 innings. You're excited about him for next season. Can he repeat it? Can he get you 30 starts next season? Can he get you 160 innings? That's the question. Then you look at the injury history of the guys behind him. Tobias Myers had such an odd year, only threw 110 innings this season. Part of that was due to going to the bullpen, but the Brewers are going to give him a shot to be a starter. Then you got Brandon Woodruff. That decision looms. 106 innings. Logan Henderson, he had injury. He's got injury history in the minor leagues. 103 innings. Aaron Ashby, 80 innings. You get my point. No one's coming close to the value that Freddie Peralta is delivering. The bang for your buck is incredible for what Freddie's been able to do. And in case you're fearful, like, well, what if you hang on to him and then let him walk? Like, what happens? You're not going to get anything back. You got to trade him. Well, you can do the qualifying offer. It's a mechanism for small market teams to give a fair offer. It's the average of the top 125 contracts in Major League Baseball. It's a one-year deal. If the player signs it, they stay with the club for one more year. Or they reject it, and then whenever they sign for X threshold of dollar amounts, they get a draft pick in return. And that team that signs them loses a draft pick. So that's something that might come up in the CBA next year. So he might get signed before December 2nd, 2026, if you catch my drift. But the point is the Brewers will still get a compensation pick back if they do not sign him. I would let it walk. I would let it ride, just like they did with Willy Adames. I would run it back, same way, let it ride. You've already got him signed, and you're going to get a ton of value out of it that way. So we'll see what happens. I'll go ahead and put my neck out there and put it on record. I would be surprised, very, very, very surprised, if they trade Freddie Peralta today, especially after that quote we heard from Matt Arnold. I would be very surprised. The market is cloudy. Joe Ryan, Mitch Keller, Tarek Skubal. There are a couple of guys that I think a lot of teams are obviously excited to get after, but then you look at the free agent market on the pitching side of things, right? Is Framber Valdez really going to move the market like you think he's going to? I really don't think so. Is Shota club option going to get declined? I don't know if the Cubs would do that. There's not going to be a lot out there. So that does change the price on Freddie. But again, I don't think the Brewers are going to trade him. Maybe they're a player for one of those multi-year potential signees, right? Maybe that's something we talk about closer to the winter meetings if those names are still available. Let's talk about some news and nuggets that we heard today. Some injury updates, some surgeries. What? No, nothing to worry about, but we'll give you the full rundown coming up next on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Text from here in the 262. You can't trade Freddie. The Brewers are in a window. Let him play out his deal and walk for a competitive balance pick. I agree entirely. We're on the same page there. Brewers Weekly. Look, little programming note here. I'm Dom Catronio. Next week, no show, because we have a Bucks game next week on Thursday night here on WTMJ. Shout out to the Bucks, 1-0. Then the following week, it will be taped, and that will be the first one reacting to the World Series, and the off season will have officially begun, where player options need to be, you know, picked up, club options, all that stuff, the 5 days after the World Series. So we'll talk about that in 2 weeks' time. The World Series starts tomorrow night, and that'll be our final segment in just a little bit. So let's give you some news and notes that we also learned today from Adam McAlvey, from Pat Murphy, from Matt Arnold, and all the things that have to go on with the Brewers getting ready for their offseason. First and foremost, William Contreras. He is going to see a hand specialist to see what's going on with his left middle finger, if surgery is an option for him. To remember, the first half of the season, he was really dealing with the pain. And I mean, we've shown photos of it. It's purple, it's swollen, it's crooked, it's displaced. It's something's wrong with it. I'm not a doctor, but something's wrong with it. So he's going to go see a specialist to see if there's anything they can do about it, if surgery would impact his timeline to be ready for spring training. We'll have to wait and see if there's anything that comes out of that. There was one player that went under the knife this week, or is scheduled to anyway, and that is Caleb Durbin. He is having minor elbow surgery. It's an arthroscopic cleanup. It's a word I can never pronounce right. An arthroscopic cleanup. So just, you know, just making sure his elbow's okay. He's something he was dealing with at the end of the season, didn't let on too much, but he's expected to be a full participant, no big deal, heading into spring training. Also, Sal Frelick had an MRI on his left knee. You may recall he missed a little bit of time earlier in the year with his left knee when he had an awkward swing and he fell to the heap. He had so much go wrong with that left knee in his career and in his athletic life. Torn meniscus, his hamstring is always on that side. It's always something wrong with his left knee, left leg. The MRI did not show anything, and he's expected to have a normal offseason. Next up, the other note on the Brewers, Quinn Priester was dealing with a minor wrist inflammation. He's expected to be fine, no surgery necessary, have a normal offseason there. And then finally, no other surgeries are scheduled at this moment for the Brewers. As for guys recovering, we caught up with Garrett Mitchell in Los Angeles. It was great to see him out there for the NLCS. He had been home in the Dallas area while he continues to rehab from another torn labrum that he suffered while on minor league rehab to come back to the Brewers. And he admitted there's a great, the entire beat got a chance to catch up with him as well, but I talked to him before game four. And just, he admitted, man, I finally felt like I was in a dark place. I got hurt again. I can't believe this. Another freak thing that injured me. And the first couple of weeks after surgery, he was down. I mean, he was really, really down. And having to start this whole process over, have to miss another season, you know, getting ready to, believe it or not, I mean, Garrett Mitchell's about to go into his first year of arbitration. Think about that for a second and how little he's played due to injury. And you feel so bad for him. And he was honest. Like, I mean, it was not fun to deal with this away from the team. But getting to see guys, see friendly faces, be in Los Angeles again, of course, where he played college ball. He grew up, you know, in Southeast LA in, you know, Orange. So Orange Lutheran is where he went. So not quite LA, but you Southern Californians know what I'm talking about here. The point being is that Garrett is expected to be back for spring training and be a participant. Now, how much he's going to be fully approved, when is he going to start swinging? Not quite yet. He's doing some light lifting, but he is running. He is making sure that he goes day by day as he tries to make sure he recovers from yet another surgery. Another move that happened, clearing waivers, Connor Thomas. Remember, sometimes in spring training, we get latched on to the Rule 5 story a little too much. And Connor Thomas, of course, made the team, made a couple of appearances, and then was having some elbow troubles, and then ultimately needed surgery. And he was a Rule 5 pick. He didn't spend enough days on the active roster to be completely cleared of being on the Brewers roster for next season. So he would have been due back to the Cardinals, who the Brewers acquired him in the Rule 5 draft. Well, here's the thing. The Cardinals didn't want him either. So he went and was subjected to waivers. Nobody claimed him, and he elected free agency. So Connor Thomas, no longer on the 40-man, but the Brewers responded by acquiring left-hander Sammy Peralta off waivers from the LA Angels. Funky side armor. We'll learn more soon, but he has got a minor league option remaining. Somebody that can fit into the mix for the bullpen next year. As of now, the 40-man roster sits at 36. And again, you want to keep space on that 40-man roster. Once you get closer to Rule 5 deadline, we'll talk about that day when that gets closer for trade acquisitions, for club options, that sort of thing, to keep an eye out for. So that's your rapid fire news and nuggets as for what the Brewers learned about the end of season reaction and everything that went down in that. Let's talk a little bit about this team and what's exciting and what's looking forward to the future, the young pitching, the position players, the quantum leaps. That's next on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's talk about some performances this season from the Brewers that they're very excited about heading into 2026. Brewers, second best team in the National League. What a story it was. Yes, the sweep was frustrating, but they still had a lot to succeed and a lot go their way, including Jackson Churio, in the words of Pat Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, he doubled up on a really fine year. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, you're not just granted these tools and then you just keep repeating them. You know, like, he came into the year with more expectations. He came into the year, he dealt with injury for the first time, not coming into the year, but midseason, he dealt with injury for the first time. He still produced. He still showed up in the postseason in the biggest games of the year. He improved defensively. You know, I don't think he went in. He didn't have a longer swoon where he was leaving the zone and not being selective. It was a shorter time doing that. So I think there was growth. Is there more growth in there? I think this guy's special.
21 years young. He's already worth 6 wins above replacement. Fewer this year than last. Defense had something to do with that. Exact same number of strikeouts year over year. Similar number of plate appearances because of the injury and last year not being a full-time player in the first half of the season. You know, back-to-back seasons with 2020, youngest player to ever do that. You imagine if he's not injured and if he plays a full season, understands what it takes to be a great player and play every day, 30-30 will be on the table for him one day. And that's really exciting about Jackson Churio. Another guy that we saw take a big step forward once again, Bryce Turang.
I think the key is that everybody continues to just move forward. You know, we saw Bryce make a quantum leap last year and become that stalwart defender, and his offense picked up. Now we've got a glimpse of what it could be. Now he's battling with, and players do this, you battle with hitter slugger. You know, are you a hitter or are you a slugger? Well, we want him to be a hitter because hitters get on base more than sluggers. And because he has the potential to steal 50 bags plus, we'd like him to be on base and be a hitter and slug when the slug is presented to itself. And I think he'll make that adjustment. I think he understands that.
Turang is very talented. He'll be a Super 2. He'll be his first year of arbitration this year, but it'll be 4 years of arbitration for Bryce. His first 3 years, 448 games, almost 12 wins above replacement, according to Baseball Reference. His career OPS is inching closer to 700, 693, given it was 585, 665, now 794. He's still growing. He's only going to be in his age 26 season next year, just entering his prime. Very excited about Bryce Turang and also excited about the young pitching that's forming here for the Brewers. We just talked about it with Miz, with Chad Patrick, with Logan Henderson. How does Murph see it?
They're young, you know, with the exception of Freddie. I think that we do have a lot of young pitchers, some not totally proven, but the upside is great. And that's a credit to these guys and how they acquire players. And they look at the Priester acquisition. I mean, that's if there's a number one acquisition of the ones that I know of some fairly obscure guy who all of a sudden comes on the scene. I don't know how many games we won when he pitched. What was that number, Mike?
19
in a row when he pitched. You know what I mean? So, like, that's the kind of stuff that makes us able to keep afloat.
So that's some of the stuff that we are looking forward to for next year. But as far as the battles and what are the headlines to look out for, the decisions that loom, we'll talk about that in our final segment next. And also give you a quick peek at the World Series. North of the border, game one tomorrow night in Toronto, depending on where you're from. There's pronunciations to Toronto. I've learned that that's a way to identify yourself as an American whenever you say Toronto, when you actually say the T. They actually like chuh. I don't know. I was only there for a couple weeks. Anyway, back with more after this. Final segment of Brewers Weekly after this.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Last couple minutes of the show. First and foremost, Toronto Blue Jays. How about that Game 7 against the Mariners come from behind? Nobody had more come from behind wins in baseball than the Toronto Blue Jays. So don't count them out at any point in this series. Also, nobody made more contact than the Toronto Blue Jays. Know who was in second? The Milwaukee Brewers. These two teams are very similar, the Blue Jays and the Brewers. I asked Matt Arnold today, you know, does it give you any satisfaction that it is possible for a team with your playing style to make it to the World Series?
Yeah, I think it's great, and a credit to Murph for sort of just making sure that that's our brand and getting the most out of every single guy that we have. I don't know if it's necessarily either or, right? I think that you have certain guys that just fit, and we talked about in the past, we had the big boy infield, and we had success with those guys with, what was that, Aguilar, Moose, and...
Shaw,
Kratz, Scope, right? It's just like you have the giant, massive infield. Those guys, we had a nice year with those guys. We have, what do they call them, short kings now or whatever. You know, that's like, you know, it's just different. That's what I've heard. People say that.
Short kings.
That's the thing. I've heard that.
Who's doing that?
I don't know. I'd be careful. Those guys are tough.
Did you guys create that?
I would be careful with that.
Short kings?
I heard that.
Wow,
but like,
cool.
Careful. They're sneaky strong. Yeah, really. I mean, just everybody, you know, it's just, I don't know if it's either or. You know, I think there's a chance to do it with both.
As a member, maybe I'm an alderman of the Short Kings Club. You know, I'm all every bit of 5'8". Very proud to be a part of that club. But the Brewers certainly will have another chance next season. They're going to pretty much run it back. So a few headlines you might see, club options to figure out. Brandon Woodruff. We'll react to this coming up at the end of the World Series in our next show in 2 weeks. You know, we'll know if the mutual option is picked up or not probably by then. Same with Rhys Hoskins. Same with Jose Quintana. Now, granted, I think Quintana's probably gone. I think Danny Jansen's probably gone. But then the club option will be picked up on Freddy Peralta. And to clear up something that you're going to hear about, don't fall for the clickbait. The Brewers are likely going to decline William Contreras' club option. That does not mean he's a free agent. He is still subjected to arbitration. The Brewers created this club option to say, hey, you know, at worst, you'll go back to arbitration. At best, you'll make $12 million. Probably not going to make $12 million. Arbitration figures project him right around $11 million. You're used to this if you're a Brewers fan dealing with arbitration, but we'll talk about that bridge when we get there. And then, of course, the other thing to figure out is what are the Brewers going to do at shortstop? Is Joey back? Is Cooper Pratt going to move up? All these things to monitor throughout spring training, which we don't have a spring training schedule yet. I want one. I want to figure out when I'm going to the warmth because I'm already in three layers and it's October 23rd. I'm sick of this. We should have been hosting game one tomorrow anyway. What a year. I know I said all my thank yous at the end of the show for game four, but just to reiterate, thank you for making this such a great season. Our producer has been Nate Rilling. I'm Dom Catronio. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Until then, keep on swinging.